I mean, I was somebody who always wrote from the time that I was really little, like a little kid. But it was always just this very sort of cathartic process for me. It was just like journaling and writing poems and then, you know, sharing them with like my best friend in the back of the choir room, and then we'd cry a bunch and whatever. It wasn't until I was out of undergrad and I was living in Cincinnati working full time, and I was just sort of looking for something to do. And so I started going to this open mic in town. And really at that point, I consider that I sort of started writing poetry at that point because I started revising. Up to that point, you know, it was just for me. So there was no point in my sort of going in and crafting it or anything like that. And so it was really at that point when I found a community of people who were super loving and supportive, and also recognized that when I recognized that I was going to be saying poems in front of people, I was like, oh, well, maybe I should look at these more than just write them and then stand up and say them. So I started doing that and got really engaged in it. And then I moved back to Chicago and got really involved with the poetry community here and going to open mics. And I wasn't really doing any competition or slams at that point, but I started working with a group of women, and we would meet every week. And none of us knew really anything about writing. None of us had, I mean, one, Lola had an English undergrad degree. We just looked at each other's work, just a very organic and natural sort of way to say, okay, well, we, you know, when we hear things that do this kind of thing on the open mic, like, how can we have our poems do that, you know? And at some point we developed this weird process where it was like, okay, you're in charge of making sure the verbs are really solid, and you're in charge of making sure it's not too flowery and whatever. At that point, poetry just sort of like took over, and I was like, oh, maybe I want to go to grad school for it, and then just sort of moved on from there. The catalyst really was less an individual poem or a teacher, and it was more coming into a sense of community, which then introduced me to the concept that there are really people alive and still writing today. Feels really weird to say now, but like, it's not how it was taught. So I wasn't really cognizant of the fact that people were alive and writing, and like contemporary poetry was kind of a thing. Oh, people are alive and writing, yeah. and they sound like me. I grew up in Des Plaines. I went away for my MFA, and I figured I would stay in New York for like maybe a year or two after that. I ended up staying there for almost 10 years, largely because I started, again, like moving really deeply into community and community building there and helping to run a reading series and all this sort of stuff. The moment when I realized that I was going to move back was so my folks live up in Lake Geneva in Wisconsin, and I was sitting on the pier with my mom, and the sun's shining, and it's, you know, New York is incredibly difficult. You know, it's incredibly rewarding, but it's incredibly difficult. And I was sitting there and I was like, why don't I live here? This is ridiculous. And she said, don't do that. She's like, we've accepted that you're never coming back. So don't say it unless you're going to do it. And I said, no, I really think I am. And then I spent a year extracting. I needed to leave a job and run out my lease and that sort of stuff. But I figured I'd come back to Chicago for like a year or two. And that was in, I think, 2009, so like 8 years ago now. Now I'm like here. But because I had never experienced it, I'd experienced it as an adult, but as like somebody who was a couple years out of college, I'd never really sort of experienced the city on my own terms and really feeling like, oh, this is a space where I can really be and do the things I want to. And I didn't know this was going to happen, but with New York, put this incredible amount of effort into like building something. And there are people who are like, this, it was so life altering, this kind of community and the spaces that we built, but it always felt like a drop in the bucket because it's New York City, you know? Whereas in Chicago, coming back, it feels like anything you do has an immediate ripple effect because it's big enough that there's enough people to be impacted, but it's also small enough, particularly within its sub-communities, that you can really make a difference. So for example, when coming back, I was like, everyone said, well, are you gonna write a reading series? Are you gonna start, you know, Loud Arts Chicago? And I said, you know, there were, especially at the time, there were ton of open mics and I think 3 different slams, and I was like, no, the city doesn't need that. But there wasn't any real opportunity to do workshopping and community learning. There wasn't the kind of expense that you would say, okay, well, it's like $500, so I'm gonna need to save up and it better be good and I better get a lot out of it. And the chances of somebody who's like not really sure they even wanna write poetry, you know, being like, all right, I'm gonna spend $500 or $1,000 on a course, I mean, it's a real barrier. And so while there are lots of opportunities for young people, for teenagers, there just wasn't much out there for the adult who was like, well, I walked into this open mic, I think it's kind of cool, maybe I'd be interested. So that was really gratifying to be like, okay, there's a spot. there's a thing here that I can do. When I was in grad school, my perception was, well, this is what you do, right? You get an MFA, and then you, like, publish a book, and you become a professor, right? That's the path. Little did I know that that was disintegrating literally as I went in, but that system has changed a lot. But also, I had a really seminal conversation with one of my professors, with Marie Howe, where she said, what are you thinking about doing after you finish here? And I was like, well, I'm a book, teaching, whatever. And she was like, well, are you sure about that? And I said, I don't know, it just seems like what you do. And I don't want to go back to being a PR consultant. And she said, well, I just feel like if you can do anything else, you should do something else. And I was perplexed and whatever. And she said, well, you know, the thing is that if you spend all day looking at people's poems and working on their poems with them and talking about poems, she said, you know, I go home at night, the last thing I want to do is write a poem, you know? And so she's like, it can be really a difficult path. So I took that to heart. And also, it's an incredibly, you know, it's what's happened in higher education with the shift towards adjuncts, and then also just like this incredible proliferation of MFA programs and getting people getting those degrees. Like, the market is completely glutted. So fortunately, I can do other things. But I did find, you know, when I was in New York, that really the community-based work was the most interesting to me. You know, when we would just do workshops like in the bar before we ran an open mic, or just find a coffee shop where we could meet and that sort of thing. So then coming back to Chicago, I felt like, well, that's something I'm interested in, is this idea that we can build spaces where people who might have advanced degrees in this, might not know anything about it, can really come together and just talk about poems. I mean, I also went into Sarah Lawrence never having taken a creative writing class. I mean, I took English classes in undergrad, but I didn't know anything about how workshops go. I didn't know the terminology and the vernacular and all this stuff, which actually ended up being really great because I just asked a ton of questions. I was like, I'm giving you a lot of money, so you're going to explain this to me. But really came to understand, and I talk about this in the workshops, the sense that, like, what I don't want is for the language of poetry to be a barrier for people to analyzing it. You know, my basic theory is if you can read, then you can read poetry. It's just words on a page. And we sit down and we always start by saying, okay, well, what do you notice about the poem? Somebody might say, there are no line breaks. It's all a big chunk, right? And go, right, so that's a prose poem. And, or they might say, it seems like, you know, this is in the voice of somebody who maybe isn't the poet themselves. Or they start with some, like, astonishing deep insight. Oh my God, I didn't even realize that about the third stanza. I'm interested in teaching, and this is an overlap with my coaching work as well, I'm interested in using the written word as a way to unpack human experience rather than to put barriers between people and their experiences, right? So often people go to poems and they're like, well, I don't get it. Or slightly better, they might be like, I feel something, but I don't really understand it. And so a lot of what I'm doing is saying, like, okay, well, let's just break it down. And looking at people's poems with them, it's to say, okay, well, what's your goal? What is the poem's goal? And then how can we make this poem a thing that does what you want it to do, that moves the reader closer to the experience that you're replicating in the poem? And the other kind of coaching I do, which is really, you know, like life coaching, growth coaching, is also about people's sort of revision process, but with their life. And so saying, like, okay, where are you? Like, what revisions have you made to this point? Where have you made changes? How do you want to build on those going forward? But again, it's an opening up instead of a really prescribed system of, like, well, first we do this career analysis, and then we decide that you should really be the CPA instead of an accountant. You know, it's not about this sort of, like, prescribed shifts, but it's really about tapping into what people are really driven by and then opening out their lives from there. I used to be much better about, like, going out to open mics and stuff and being, like, recruiting folks for the workshop, but being like, I like your poem, you should come. Now I'm just so busy that I'm not making it out to a lot of things, so it just tends to be sort of word of mouth, or somebody sees it on Facebook. They're called Vox Ferris workshops, and I run them about once a month, and I'm just out in the living room, and they're always a Friday or Saturday night, and folks bring snacks and drinks, and it's very community focused. What we do is we start out with an icebreaker, introduce yourself, pronouns, that sort of thing, and then I send out ahead of time a poem for the group to look at, and we discuss that for a while, and then we do a writing prompt together, so everybody gets to walk away with a little bit of writing. And then the last part of it is that anybody who's interested in having the group workshop their poem, they put their names in a hat, pull out three, and then we discuss those poems. When I was initially teaching, I had to sort of fail my way into. Like, oh, I can't just walk into some place with a poem and expect people to get excited about it or know anything to say. So I need to like do a list of discussion questions ahead of time. It's funny because it's, I feel like the work that I was doing in New York in terms of community building really helped me sort of understand how to set up this kind of thing and be able to sort of like invite people into my home without feeling like it's too much and overwhelming, in the sense that I came to understand when I was in New York that we wanted to create a space where everyone was welcomed and felt safe and cared for. We would burn out really fast when we would encounter moments where those of us running the series felt like we had to be everybody's friend, because like the group of us who were running it, we were our own social circle, right? So we were all close friends, and people would sort of be like, oh, now we're all friends, you know? It's like, well, or not. We're members of a community together, but got a fair amount of practice in sort of like setting appropriate boundaries and that sort of stuff. So it's been great having folks, you know, come through the workshop, some of whom have become dear friends of mine, and we do writing together even outside of here. Other folks pass through. Some folks have come for years. Some people will come for a few months, and then they disappear, and sometimes they come back, and sometimes I'm like, I think maybe they left town, you know? So there's an interesting sort of ebb and flow. When I'm writing, I'm not thinking about accessibility in it, per se. I'm thinking about how to create these small worlds or emotional containers for the experience that, or the idea that I'm trying to unpack. And sometimes that ends up taking a form that is really immediately accessible by anyone. And sometimes it takes a less accessible form, a less immediately accessible form. For me, the biggest access point really is more about when we go into the learning process, and also probably because I sort of started really paying attention to my own poetry and the poetry of others in the performance realm. You know, you can take a really inaccessible poem and perform it in such a way that people are like, I have no idea what that meant, but it was the saddest thing I've ever heard, you know? Or, wow, I feel really, like, joyful. You know, I only caught parts of it. Always wary of sort of underestimating people, because I feel like sometimes when we talk about accessibility, it's like, okay, well, we need to dumb down the poem, or we need to make it, you know, we need to change something about it because, you know, people just won't get it. And that has in no way been my experience. You know, I've heard brilliant analyses of what people would consider fairly inaccessible poems from people without any formal upper level education. Because when we start with the question of like, just what do you see there? Yeah. You know, it opens up this whole other world. Because I trust the reader in this way, I'm not going to overdetermine the poem and be like, well, that's a word people aren't going to understand. The question is it the right word? I was also in my graduate work, had good teachers who were like, so you love language, Marty, you know, which is great. But like, are you using this word, this long, fancy word, because you love it? Or because it's the right word in the poem. Yeah. And if it's the right word, great, wonderful. But if you're just using it because you love it, then maybe that goes somewhere else. Yeah, so it's to me a matter of like trusting the poem and then trusting the reader as well. You know, on the flip side of it, I'm not about sort of puzzle poems, like poems that set out to be purposely obtuse. Mm-hmm. I also don't, I'm just sort of like, well, you know, if it's just like a riddle for the sake of a riddle, not really about that work. So, which, you know, treads this sort of fine line, right? You know, it's like, does the poem reward the time unpacking it? You know, is it a poem that is, you know, forcing me to have a visceral experience of difficulty? You know, oh, okay, well, maybe that makes sense if it's a poem that intends that and is about something that's really difficult. I mean, I think it means what these sort of named months mean to just sort of say, like, this is a moment, like, Women's History Month, right? You know, like, okay, wonderful. It's a month where we, like, talk about these issues that we really need to be talking about all year round. For me, what it has come to mean over the years is that oftentimes during National Poetry Month, a bunch of us do 30 poems in 30 days, just as a challenge. Not doing that this year. I haven't done it in a while. But that's really wonderful, just in the sense of it, you know, brings a bunch of people together from around the country and forces those of us who are doing it into this sort of like hyperactive production mode, which helps to get out of the evaluative brain and into the parts of your brain that just like produce the good weird stuff, because you're like, I just have to write, and it's like day 12 and I've used up all of my 10 good ideas. Now I'm just gonna write about snails and that's it. I feel like there was also been a real sea change in the country in terms of its sort of awareness and perception of poetry. 15, 20 years ago, the perception of poetry in terms of the daily life in the country was different, right? And so National Poetry Month kind of served a different purpose. It was oftentimes like the one time it got taught in schools, or that a poet came into a school, or that sort of thing. And I feel like that's happening a lot more consistently now, thanks to Deaf Poetry Jam, and thanks to the rise of hip-hop, and the proliferation of youth-focused spoken word and poetry programs, like Young Chicago Authors and Urban Word in New York, and that sort of thing. So it's shifted a little bit, you know, whereas before it was a little like, okay, well, this is the one shot, you know, and now it's sort of like, oh, okay, cool, it's National Poetry Month. So now we can put a little extra emphasis on it.